In a land shrouded by fog and ancient mysteries, one enigmatic figure stands apart. Welcome to episode number 167 of Lore of the Rings. I'm Aaron, your host and fellow Middle-earth wanderer. Today we explore the final pages of Chapter 8, Fog on the Borrowdowns, from J.R.R. Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring. Thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today, as we say farewell to the mysterious character of Tom Bombadil, and explore some tidbits of history sprinkled into this chapter. If you haven't already, please tap that subscribe or follow button. You won't want to miss out on all my lore-filled breakdowns of Amazon's Rings of Power Season 2 coming up in just a couple of weeks. And be sure to visit ringspodcast.com to contact me or find past episodes. Now, let's wander. Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide. Shout out to fellow wanderer Nathan, who sent me the following message on Instagram. Quote, "I found your podcast about 2 weeks ago, and I appreciate every episode. I started at the beginning to look at a deeper literary analysis of the Silmarillion and pick up on information I may have missed. I love Tolkien, and the way you break down his works is simple and provides further clarity of the events in Middle-earth. I am slowly catching up to your most recent episode, but I am enjoying the journey along the way. Thank you for what you do." Nathan, I'm happy that you have found the show and that you're making it all the way through from episode number one. I guess it'll be a while before you hear this shout-out. Please don't judge me for my early days, and I hope you do enjoy the whole journey through the first age of Middle-earth, and I look forward to when you're all the way caught up. Now, if you're listening right now, I would really love to hear from you. Send me a note on Instagram or use the contact form at ringspodcast.com, and you may just get a future shout-out. When you read The Lord of the Rings, you cannot help but glance at the map every few pages, and if you don't, well, it's easy to get lost. So inspired by the beautiful maps that accompany the books, let's check the story map for today's tale. We are exploring J.R.R. Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring. It is the third age of Middle-earth. Sauron's One Ring has been found, and Frodo and Frans are trying to reach Bree to meet Gandalf. Frodo has just escaped a horrific encounter with an evil creature, a wight, who had Sam, Pippin, and Merry prepared as a human sacrifice. Frodo called on the help of Tom Bombadil, who is nature personified. Through his powerful songs, Tom has freed the hobbits and crumbled the Hill of the Wight. We pick up the hobbits as they regroup after their encounter with the Wight and are preparing for their next leg of their journey. For that journey, Tom has been able to wrangle their ponies, and even has his own, so that he can accompany the hobbits to the edge of his realm. The hobbits are delighted that Tom is coming with them. However, Tom does say that he needs to attend to his duties, and reminds the hobbits that he is the master of wood, water, and hill, but only within the bounds that he has set for himself. Quote, "Tom can't always be near to open doors, that would be hill, and willow cracks, that would be wood. Tom has his house to mind, and Goldberry is waiting. There's the water, as personified in the river daughter Goldberry." We've seen multiple times how Tom is master of wood, water, and hill, or as the pattern is laid out by Tom here, hill, wood, and water. Yet he is not master over all Middle-earth, just his own lands. And true, Tom, quote, "would not feel happy till he had seen the hobbits safe over the border of his land, and yet he can't be bothered to continue on with them on their quest. For one thing, he doesn't understand it, or their plight, but he has helped them along the way because he reveres all life and creatures who lean towards the light." Tom understands his own limitations, similar to how Gandalf would not take the ring from Bilbo, which we explored a few episodes back. Indeed, at the borders of his realm, Tom bids the hobbits farewell. While they stand here at the limitations of Tom's mastery, he admits that, quote, "Tom is not master of riders from the Blacklands far beyond his own country." Now, this line from Tom may seem to contradict the way in which Tom treated the ring at the end of the previous chapter. He treated it like an oddity, using cheap parlor tricks and jokes to subdue the evil symbolism of the ring. We might think that Tom has power over the ring, but in a few chapters, Gandalf will correct that misunderstanding. Quote, "No, I should not put it so. Say rather that the ring has no power over him. He is his own master." And this next line from Gandalf is crucial to understanding what Tom said. Quote, He cannot alter the ring itself, nor break its powers over others. So Tom is unaffected by the ring, but he does not have power over it, nor does he have power to command those who are enslaved by the ring, such as the Black Riders, that have been pursuing Frodo and friends from the very steps of Bag End in the Shire. While Tom may be able to playfully treat the ring, he is still influenced by the effects the ring has on others, namely the Black Riders. He knows his place, he has formed his own boundaries, and he will mind his own corner of Middle-earth until some time that he chooses. And as he bounces away from the hobbits, he gives us one last song. Quote, Tom's country ends here, he will not pass the borders. Tom has his house to mind, and Goldberry is waiting. And so we say farewell to Tom Bombadil, whose strange and surprising intrusion into the story of the Lord of the Rings comes now to an end. Stay tuned. In a few episodes from now, I have a special interview with a guest from the Thoughts on Tolkien blog, and we will discuss all things Tom Bombadil. As Tom departs, Samwise Gamgee has a few things to say about Tom, and he will give a rather odd review. However, if you are enjoying this podcast, please open your phone right now, if it's safe, that is, and leave a rating and review. Your reviews are so encouraging to me. I can't tell you how many times I've been down and then a new review or note comes in from a listener like you, and it brightens my day. So let's take a moment and examine what Sam has to say about Tom. Remember, Sam is the working class hobbit of the bunch. He doesn't have the same level of education or manners as the other hobbits, and even up to this point hasn't even really been labeled a friend of Frodo, but rather like the valet, the manservant who accompanies the hero. A function that has been filled by many a wonderful sidekick, from stories like Beowulf to Sherlock Holmes and Star Wars. That said, Sam is the singular hobbit who is able to provide the everyman commentary on what's happening in the story. He says it like he sees it, and he sees it rather clearly. So here's what he says about Tom, quote, "He's a caution and no mistake. I reckon we may go a good deal further and see not better nor queerer." Queerer. Sam's straightforward assessment of Tom Bombadil highlights his unique perspective as the Everyman. Unlike Frodo, who is burdened with the heavy task of carrying the One Ring, or Merry and Pippin, who possess a more leisurely and privileged upbringing, Sam's grounded viewpoint provides a refreshing honesty. He recognizes Tom's peculiar nature without the layers of interpretation that others might impose. Sam's plain speech cuts through the mystique surrounding Tom, boiling it down to a simple yet profound truth. Tom is an enigma, and they are unlikely to encounter anyone as extraordinary on their journey, at least in Sam's eyes. Sam's words underscore the sense of wonder and oddity that permeates Tom, Middle-earth in general, and in particular, the Barrow Downs. This landscape, shrouded in fog and ancient mystery, feels almost alive with mystery and danger. Tom Bombadil, with his whimsical songs and unfathomable power, stands in stark contrast to the ominous atmosphere of the Downs. Sam's remark about Tom being a caution reflects not just Tom's strangeness, but also a sense of respect and wariness for the unknown forces at play. Through Sam's eyes, we see that Tom is not just a curious figure, but a pivotal guide through a perilous and enigmatic world. That said, we skipped some rather revealing details between the Barrow and the Border, so let's back up and get to those right after this break.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com tolkienmagazine.com/save50 today.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide. In 1937, during the months leading up to the publication of The Hobbit, Tolkien wrote a rather interesting comment in a letter about The Hobbit, and more specifically about the tidbits of history that were sprinkled throughout. If you remember our explorations of The Hobbit, you might remember hearing about Gondolin, a historical place that doesn't appear in the story. In letter number 15, Tolkien commented that, quote, "the magic and mythology and assumed history, and most of the names, like the Epic of the Fall of Gondolin, give the narrative an air of reality and have a northern atmosphere." What Tolkien is saying here is that these little hints of a wider history, of kingdoms and peoples long since past, lost to the ancient times and lands, those things give the story a deep sense of realism, or verisimilitude. While these historical things aren't really explored in the story at hand, they are rather assumed, meaning that the characters can observe the history, but their knowledge may be limited, just as if you or I were to happen upon some ancient building. In fact, I was on a scenic drive with my family just a few weeks ago, and we whizzed by a stone building that was half crumbled. Well, I turned right around so we could go back and explore the ruins and have a little adventure. Okay, what does this idea have to do with the Fog on the Borrowdowns chapter? Well, just as in The Hobbit, Tolkien found many and various places to interweave the broader history of Middle-earth into The Lord of the Rings, and this chapter is a great example. And just as with The Hobbit, these historical sprinklings provide a richer depth of realism to the story. So let's take a look at a few. After Tom has released the hobbits from the Barrow, he lays all the treasure out in the sun. From the treasure, he pulls up a brooch, which notably has blue stones, like water, set within it. After he picks it up, quote, "he looked long at it, as if stirred by some memory." After a moment, he tells the hobbits, quote, "fair was she who long ago wore this on her shoulder." Now, it's not clear to me if, in reality, Tom personally knew the woman who had claimed the brooch. It's possible, knowing that Tom was in these lands far before any of the other species were ever here, but it doesn't seem likely that Tom had many interactions with the peoples of the land. I think rather Tom is experiencing something like what Mary experienced while under the sleeping spell of the White. Some portion of memory seems to be transferred. Now, I won't say that these two experiences are exactly the same, because clearly they aren't. But it seems to me that Tom has some power of being able to look into the past and track the history of the brooch in his thoughts. Regardless of how he knows, he says that the brooch will go to Goldberry, in honor and memory of her who wore it long ago, which, on second thought, seems to suggest some level of personal relationship. Next, from the treasures, Tom pulls out a handful of daggers, which he gives to the hobbits for use as swords. Tom also has some knowledge of these, as, quote, "then he told them that these blades were forged many long years ago by men of Westerness. They were foes of the Dark Lord, but were overcome by the evil king of Carn-Dûm in the land of Angmar." Let's parse that out a bit. The men of Westerness refers to the men from the kingdom of Numenor, the mighty seafaring kingdom of men in the Second Age of Middle-earth. The remnants of the Numenoreans are known as the Dúnedain in Middle-earth. In the previous episode, we tracked the history of Numenor to the kingdom of Arnor, the three smaller kingdoms that eventually fell to the Witch King of Angmar. Now, I know that seems like a lot to drop on you, but let's remember a few key details. The blades that the hobbits use were forged by the Dúnedain. Merry has some portion of a personal memory of the last prince of one of the kingdoms who fell at the hands of the Witch King of Angmar. Eventually, this little dagger will come in handy when Merry will have a chance to settle the score with the chief of the Nazgûl. But we'll get to that scene, in like 2 or 3 years at this pace. As to the designs of the swords, in the book The Making of Middle-earth, Christopher Snyder points out that, quote, "leaf-shaped sword and daggers are typical of the Bronze Age and early Iron Age rather than the medieval." I'm sure Tolkien was well aware of these historical nuances, and in just the simple design of the daggers, he further underscores just how ancient these blades are, not to mention the history that surrounds them. Anyway, Tom Bombadil is able to tell the hobbits the history of the men of the kingdom. And as they listen, it is as if a vision opens up to them, quote, a great expanse of years behind them, like a vast shadowy plain over which there strode shapes of men, tall and grim with bright swords, and last came one with a star on his brow. The hobbits here are seeing the history of the kingdom of the Dunedain, which really is the family history of a rather important and critical character that the hobbits are about to meet, Aragorn, son of Arathorn, who will be introduced to them as Strider. As they continue on their journey, Tom sings various songs, some nonsense, but others he sang in, quote, a strange language unknown to the hobbits, an ancient language, whose words were mainly those of wonder and delight. Tolkien, ever the philologist, loved the beauty and aestheticism of language. He thought that the simple sounds and structures of a language conveyed meaning beyond just the words or syntax. This line just goes to show how language and history are intertwined. And the fact that this ancient language is not really explained in detail, but rather the hobbits seem to just bask in the delight of hearing it, even if they don't understand it, all that just underscores the idea from Tolkien's letter. The language and history that is sprinkled throughout, yet not explained, adds to the feeling of an inner consistency of reality in the story. And lastly, the small company passes through a dike. Quote, Tom said that it had once been the boundary of a kingdom, but a very long time ago. He seemed to remember something sad about it, and would not say much. Again, Tom has a deep and ancient memory. And while he is normally a cheerful fellow, he does feel some level of sadness. Was it perhaps for long-lost friendships he may have shared and cherished with these ancient peoples? Perhaps he mourned the dire consequences of war. Whatever the reason, we again get just a hint of a deeper history, without much explanation. To quote again from Christopher Snyder's The Making of Middle-earth, quote, there were many dikes in England built as boundary markers and or for defensive purposes in the early Middle Ages. Most of these were built during the centuries-long conflict between the Britons and the Saxons. I can imagine Tolkien so steeped and admiring of the history of the land that he called home, pulling in this small historical detail, just to give added depth and realism to his story. I, for one, love these little historical hints, especially now when we have the beautiful benefit of decades of scholarship and publication that has examined every word of Lord of the Rings, and we can go through the appendices and crack open the Silmarillion or find some primary source commentary from Tolkien or some well-researched scholarly opinion and really wander and get lost in all the lore and history of Middle-earth. But as we're about to see in a few chapters, quote, not all those that wander are lost. Well, as we wave goodbye to Tom, we will say farewell to our brave hobbits, at least for a few episodes. I've got some exciting and unique episodes coming up for you. For next time, I collaborated with Ian and Danae from the Captain's Pod, a podcast that usually explores Star Trek. We teamed up to compare Lord of the Rings with Trek, even doing some character showdowns. Who would win between Gandalf and Captain Picard? Tune in next time to find out. Beyond that, I have a few other special guests lined up, and then we'll be right in the middle of Amazon's Rings of Power Season 2, where I'll be here to break down all the lore, history, and give my critique of every single episode. But for now, thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today. My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. For feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big on your next project right now at Menards. Save time on your paint project with help from Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape. Use on walls, trim, glass, wood, or metal for clean removal and clean paint lines every time. Save big and get a 3-pack of Duck Clean Release Painter's Tape on sale now through September 22nd. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.